His mom handed him a glass containing a few fingers of scotch, neat.
"Look like you could use that," she said.
Nigel stared at her for a second, then shrugged and took an indelicate sip. The scotch certainly didn't help him focus, but it did blur the edges of things, made it easier for him to force smiles. His mom didn't have any problem with that. Bea was in her element. At some point, the reception turned into a networking event. She mingled, worked the room. There was a steady procession of men, usually the ones who hadn't showed up with their wives, but not always, who kissed Bee's hand and professed their heartfelt sympathy. If she needed anything or, say, wanted to get a coffee and just talk, they were available.
"Can't tell why most of these people are here. Certainly not to honor our father," Jessa said to Nigel out of the corner of her mouth. "I'd say a good chunk showed up so they could hit on Mom. But then I also think there's a sizable crowd here to catch a glimpse of the guard."
The back of Nigel's neck prickled.
"Huh? Really?
Don't tell me you haven't noticed."
"Being kind of in my own head."
"Up your own arse, you mean?" Jessa said with a laugh. "Look at those two," she said, gesturing at an older couple across the room. "Right now, they're saying how they thought you'd be taller and glowier."
Nigel pushed his fingers through his hair and found that he was sweating. Now that Jessa mentioned it, there were an awful lot of people staring at him, waiting for him to do a trick, maybe.
"They did not..."
Nigel paused. He saw black spots for a moment.
"They did not say, glowier."
"I'm an excellent lip reader. Maybe that's my legacy," Jessa replied, then narrowed her eyes at him. "Nigel, you all right?"
Nigel steadied himself on a nearby end table. It had all hit him like a ton of bricks. The sleepless trip to London, the jet lag, the scotch.
"Think I might need to lie down," he mumbled.
His mom was at his side, her cool hands pressed against his cheek and forehead. When had she popped up? Nigel hadn't even noticed.
"Go on up and rest, love," she said gently. "You won't be missing anything down here."
Nigel nodded and did as he was told. As he stumbled out of the sitting room, he got the odd sensation that everyone in there had turned to watch him go. When he woke up, it was night and the house was quiet. Nigel sat up in bed. His bed, the firm mattress with the wooden frame that he always banged his gangly knees against, drenched in sweat and with a splitting headache. He felt like he might be coming down with something. Someone had placed a glass of ice water next to his bed. He drank greedily. Even though this was his childhood room, it had never really felt like his space. The walls were covered in bookshelves filled with musty old editions of classics he'd never read. There was a globe in one corner and an antique train set in the other. The wallpaper was a snowy woodland print, all big-eyed owls and foxes darting around trees. No records. No posters for punk bands. Not even an anarchy symbol. This place wasn't him. It wasn't... Wait. What was that smell? Nigel sniffed the air. He could swear that he smelled gasoline. He swung his feet out of bed, crossed the room on wobbly legs, and poked his head outside. The hallway was dark, but the smell of gas out there was stronger.
"Mom!"
he called.
"Jessa!"
The floorboards creaked. It sounded like something was being dragged around. The noise came from downstairs. There were lights on down there, a faint glow on the nearby staircase.
Oi, Nigel said, rubbing his eyes. I missed the funeral pyre.
No answer. Something wasn't right. Nigel regretted calling out now, like a dumbass in a horror movie. He crouched low into a fighting stance that Ran would approve of, ready to pounce if a threat came lurching out of the shadows. He crept to the top of the stairs. There was someone lying on the floor down there. Was that Ken Colton, his Earth Guard escort? The man's eyes were open, staring straight up at the ceiling. Open and unblinking. Dead eyes. The front door was open, the portrait of his father knocked aside. Two men in black body armor walked through, carrying the body of another peacekeeper. Nigel didn't remember her name. Their outfits were familiar. Just like the men Nigel had fought in Iceland. Blackstone mercenaries. The armored men dropped the woman's body next to Colton and went back outside. One of them was whistling. A third mercenary came around the corner carrying a red canister of gasoline. He dumped some of it on the peacekeeper's body, then moved on, splashing it on the curtains and on the picture of Mr. Barnaby. Nigel could see the gas now, glistening and pooling all over the hardwood floor.
Nigel?
It was his mom. She stood in her bedroom doorway, head tilted. Nigel motioned for her to be quiet, to stay back, but she came towards him anyway. Nigel took a step in her direction, trying to intercept her before the mercenary noticed her.
Get back, Mum. There are bad men here, Nigel said, using his legacy to direct his voice so only she could hear.
You weren't supposed to wake up so soon, love.
Huh?
Before Nigel knew what was happening, his mom had stuck a syringe into the side of his neck. Nigel's eyes widened. He grasped at her, then flailed backwards. His limbs already felt heavy, his vision blurry. It was like a more intense version of how he'd felt after she gave him that drink before. He looked into his mother's eyes, and the truth hit him, piercing the fuzziness that was overtaking him. An older British woman with blonde hair. That's how Taylor described the lady at the Foundation, who Einar reported to. She'd even signed her letter B. What were the bloody chances? As Nigel reeled backwards, he spotted another mercenary. This one came out of his mother's room carrying her luggage.
Well, don't let him fall and hit his head, you daft bastard!
At his mom's order, the mercenary dropped the luggage and looped his arms around Nigel's chest. He was too weak to fight. He tried to use his legacies, to scream, to shove with his telekinesis, but he couldn't focus. All he wanted to do was sleep. Bee gently stroked his cheek with the back of her hand.
There, there, she said. Sleep now. When you wake up, we'll have that chat.
Chapter 15. Kopano Okeke, Ran Takeda. The Human Guard Academy, Point Reyes, California. Kopano hated to run. That's not to say he didn't like to exercise. He enjoyed training. He loved games and competition. But running simply for the sake of running, what was the point of that? Breathing hard, Kopano chugged past the 4-mile marker on the dirt track that snaked around the academy grounds. Only one more mile of this boredom to endure. It still disappointed Kopano that not all training at the academy was cool legacy-related activities. In fact, the good stuff only really took place under Nine's tutelage, while the vast majority of their exercise regimen was overseen by other faculty. Strength coaches, boot camp sergeants, world-renowned personal trainers. Sadists, all of them. Their shared goal to turn the young guard into perfect athletic specimens. Copano wasn't supposed to use his legacies on this 5-mile run. But if he made his body a little lighter as his calves got sorer, who would know the difference? Footsteps pounded behind him. Copano glanced over his shoulder, saw Nick Lambert bounding along behind him. The Belgian kid was broader and taller than Copano, more powerful, thanks to his enhanced strength legacy, and clearly the better runner. He'd started a full 10 minutes behind Copano.
"Come on, Copano! Pick it up!"
Nick yelled in a way that was probably meant to be encouraging. Copano's brow furrowed, but he was too winded to form a reply, and then Nick was by him anyway. He couldn't wait to return to the dorms and commiserate with Nigel, who also hated these purposeless runs. The thought of venting to his friend actually got Copano to pick up some speed. Except, Copano realized, there was no one back in his suite to complain to. His pace returned to its dogged norm as the disappointment set in. Caleb had been transferred to Earthguard, and Nigel was home mourning his father for at least a few more days. It had dawned on Copano 3 days ago, during that first night having the pod to himself, that he had never really been lonely before. At first, the solitude had seemed like a cool novelty to Copano. Back in Lagos, he shared a room with his little brothers. Personal space there was a foreign concept. Of course, there were times when he could sneak off and be alone, but even then there was always a reassuring bustle of activity nearby, the voices of his parents or neighbors audible through the thin walls of their apartment. Even though he had his own room at the academy, it was still pretty much the same deal. Either Nigel or Caleb, sometimes many Calebs, were in the common room, and if not, he could still sense them moving about in their own rooms. The first night, Copano had thrilled at sitting around in the common room wearing nothing but his boxers, singing along loudly to whatever came on the radio. But that got boring quick, and the quiet of his pod started to feel unnatural. He spent most of that night in Taylor's suite, lingering there late enough that Taylor could barely keep her eyes open. He only left when Isabella started mocking him about being too scared to stay in his own room by himself. This wasn't an easy time for Copano to be without his friends. The coverage about him and Ran was still playing around the clock on all the cable news networks. Apparently, there was nothing those journalists liked more than speculating what might happen next. Would the guard be sent to jail for assault? Would they be deported to their home countries? Would there be another attack? The hypothetical questions were answered by experts whose fields ranged from international law to child psychology, and all their opinions were somehow considered to be breaking news. Up ahead on the track, Copano spotted Ran. He grimaced. She wasn't part of his endurance training seminar, which meant she was out here for the fun of it. He slowed his pace so that he wouldn't catch up to her, then veered off the track entirely and headed for the dorms. If his instructor noticed, Copano would just lie and say he'd gotten a cramp. Ran was the reason Copano hadn't spent every night hanging out in Taylor's suite. He was avoiding her. He knew it was stupid. Ran was just as much a victim as him. But being around her reminded him of the whole Harvester controversy. It's not like Ran tried to talk to him about the incident. The girl didn't say much of anything, especially without Nigel around to coax words out of her. But he knew that she'd been hanging around the student union, watching the news as much as possible, letting the demented coverage of their misdeeds buffet her. He wanted to forget about the whole thing, ignore it until it went away. He couldn't understand why Ran was so obsessed with watching the men on the news call her a monster. From the corner of her eye, Ran watched Copano veer off the track and head for the dorms. She had slowed her pace to see if he would like to run with her, but wasn't offended that he instead chose to run away. She didn't take it personally. Their faces were often together these days, grainy screen grabs on television, newspapers, and blogs. Rand couldn't blame Capano for wanting some space. Rand picked up speed, relishing the burning in her lungs. Soon, Nick Lambert came into view. She passed him easily, a faint smile on her lips, as she felt the boy increase his pace in a valiant attempt to keep up with her. Rand had spent a lot of time on the track lately, exhausting herself on purpose, burning away the angry energy inside her that welled up whenever she watched Wolf News, which, lately, was often. If Capano had asked why she watched so much of the channel's distorted coverage, she would have told him how it confirmed her own concerns about her legacies. She'd sworn off her destructive powers for the same reasons the newscasters on Wolf News articulated. She was dangerous, unpredictable, deadly. And yet, hearing herself described this way, knowing how the media had twisted the details of their encounter with the Harvesters beyond recognition, this all infuriated Ran. She couldn't reconcile those two feelings. So she ran. And she kept watching. Actually, it was about time for Don Leary to come on. He was the worst of all the Wolf News blowhards, which meant Ran never missed an episode. Ran left the track and headed for the student union, stretching out her back and legs as she went. It was late afternoon, the sun just starting to dip low. That weird time when it was too early for dinner, but too late for lunch. That meant the student union wouldn't be crowded. No one would compete with her for use of the TV. As Ran approached, she noticed a group of peacekeepers in jumpsuits milling around outside. They were a maintenance crew, engaged in breaking and pulling up tiles around the entrance and dumping the fragments into a nearby dumpster. They had blocked off the student union's entrance with yellow caution tape. Ran stopped short and raised a questioning eyebrow at the nearest peacekeeper. "Mold," he explained with a shrug. "We'll be done before dinner."
"I see," Ran said, not letting her disappointment show.
She started to turn away, but the peacekeeper stopped her.
"You look like you could use something to eat," he said, noting Ran's sweaty appearance.
He lifted up the yellow tape.
"If you don't mind the noise, I think they left some cold sandwiches out from lunch."
Ran bowed her head and smiled.
"Thank you."
"Sure," he replied. "Gotta keep our best and brightest fueled up, eh?"
She ducked under the caution tape and entered the student union, deserted except for the sweating peacekeepers, immediately making a beeline not for the sandwiches, but for the remote. Capano stopped outside his dorm room and listened, hoping to hear the abrasive chords of one of Nigel's punk bands. No such luck. Only silence waited for Capano. He sighed and loosened his molecules, passing through the door like a ghost.
"Another night alone in my underwear," Capano declared to the empty room.
Maybe you could hold off on that?"
Capano practically jumped out of his skin at the sound of a woman's voice. He turned and found a smiling peacekeeper standing in the doorway to Caleb's room. She was in her 30s, with short brown hair and freckles, and wore the blue and white jumpsuit of a cadet, the ones they sometimes sent onto campus to do jobs that didn't fall under the guard's comprehensive chore list, usually maintenance stuff. From her accent, Capano could tell she was American.
"Didn't mean to scare you," she said,
stepping aside so that Capano could see past her. There was a second peacekeeper, a male, in Caleb's old room, this one pulling the sheets off the bed and loading them into a large hamper.
"You didn't scare me," Capano said, and puffed out his chest. "Okay, maybe a little," he added, and the peacekeeper chuckled. What are you doing in there?
Gotta get the room ready for the next occupant. All kinds of stuff we have to do, she replied. The woman waved a handheld Geiger counter at Copano. Would you believe we have to test the mattress for radiation?
Seriously? But that's got nothing to do with Caleb's power.
Yeah, we know that. Still, it's one of the regulations. She rolled her eyes. We should be out of your hair in 30 minutes or so.
No rush, Copano said.
He actually felt grateful for the company.
Will there be a new roommate coming soon?
The peacekeeper shrugged. No idea. She snapped her fingers as if remembering something. Oh, hey, we found this in the closet. Think your friend left it behind.
She held up a gray canister. It looked like hairspray without a label. Copano squinted and walked forward for a closer look.
What is it?
We are going on 5 days since we here at Wolf News first broke the story of two guard going on a rogue rampage across California, proclaimed Don Leary,
the red-faced goon whose abrasive manner of speech Ran had somehow grown inured to since she became a voracious viewer of his channel.
And what has the response been from Earth Guard?
Leary paused for rhetorical emphasis, and Ran found herself hesitating with a square piece of tuna salad sandwich poised just in front of her mouth. A statement from Earth Guard appeared on the screen next to Leary's head. He proceeded to read it out loud, inflecting some of the words with sarcastic emphasis.
We at Earth Guard are aware of the incident in California. We are currently conducting an internal investigation into the matter and are confident that the Human Guard Academy and Earth Guard complies with the UN standards in the Guard Declaration.
Leary shook his head in disgust. His words echoed around the virtually empty student union. Ran sat right under the mounted big-screen television, legs crisscrossed, half-eaten sandwich in her lap. She used to sit like this back home when she was a kid, right in front of the TV, letting her favorite anime engulf her. Wolf News wasn't nearly as entertaining, but she still couldn't look away.
What are the bureaucrats at Earth Guard really saying here?
Leary asked his viewers.
They're saying that we here, in America, basically don't have any rights. Attacked on our own soil by superpowered foreigners, and this is a matter not for the California State Police, not the FBI, not the NSA, for the UN. The United Nations, folks. Are you kidding me? Who put them in charge?
Ran sensed movement behind her. She glanced over her shoulder and saw that a couple of peacekeepers from outside had come in to rummage through a toolbox, although she caught them surreptitiously peeking at her and the TV. She wondered what the soldiers thought of this whole mess. After all, she and Copano weren't the only ones getting dragged by Leary. The peacekeepers were getting it bad as well. She turned her attention back to the news.
Ms. Takeda?
Ran's shoulders tensed. Now there was a voice even more unwelcome than the broadcaster. Gregor, dressed as usual in one of his expensive suits, stepped between the peacekeepers as he entered the student union and approached.
You shouldn't watch this ill-informed buffoon, he said, waving at Leary. He's too one-sided.
Ran wasn't in the mood for another one of Gregor's slimy recruitment speeches. She wrapped what was left of her sandwich back in its plastic and stood up.
I was just going, she said.
Oh, I see, Gregor replied. Well, have a nice rest. We'll talk soon.
A nice...
Ran felt a pinch. She twisted her head. Something was sticking out of her neck. She groped for her throat and yanked out a tranquilizer dart.
What if this?
Her mouth was already numb. As her vision dimmed, Ran noticed that the peacekeepers by the door had found what they were looking for in their toolbox. Tranquilizer guns with suppressors. One of them had shot her. Ran stumbled. Gregor caught her under the arms and supported her weight.
"I know you don't trust me," he said, "but this is for your own good."
"What is that?" Copano asked. "Cologne or something?"
The peacekeeper shrugged again, her smile unwaveringly pleasant. As soon as Copano got close, she pressed down a button on the top of the canister. With a pressurized hiss, the bottle sprayed an odorless mist right in Copano's face. He laughed in surprise at the sudden numbing sensation.
"Weird," Copano muttered. "I don't think that's Caleb's."
He fell on his face, knocked out. The two peacekeepers picked him up and dumped him in the hamper, covering his body with the old sheets from Caleb's bed. Chapter 16. Taylor Cook. The Human Guard Academy. Point Reyes, California.
"What do you mean you don't know where they are?" Taylor shouted.
Nine ground his teeth together as he paced back and forth.
"Relocated for their own protection. That's all Earth Guard told me. After they already took them."
He pressed his knuckles into his metal palm.
"Gregor didn't even have the balls to tell me in person."
Their words echoed off the walls of the service area beneath the training center. Their hidden lair seemed so much bigger now that two-thirds of the fugitive six were gone. Taylor stood next to the bulletin board covered in their intel about the Foundation. All that digging seemed pointless now, and the room, once a safe place for Taylor and her friends, felt cold and empty.
"They took them," Taylor said, still in disbelief. "Snatched them up just like the Foundation would have."
"I don't know if that's a fair comparison," Malcolm said.
He stood in the middle of the room, between Nine and Taylor, his hands out and open, perpetually ready to calm someone down.
"We don't actually know the full story here. It's possible Earth Guard got wind of some threat and took them into custody for their own protection."
"I thought the Academy and Earth Guard were the same thing," Isabella said.
She sat at the table, looking more cool and collected than the others. Her nails clicked repeatedly against the laminate surface, the only sign she was feeling any anxiety about what was going on. Taylor envied her friend for being so in control.
"Our responsibility here is to train and take care of young guard," Malcolm replied. "Once you're promoted to Earth Guard, the UN is in charge until your 5-year service period is over. Ultimately, they call the shots, especially considering how this incident with the harvesters happened outside the Academy."
A chill crept up Taylor's spine. Wasn't this exactly what Einar had described to her back in Iceland? That Earth Guard was just a bigger, more public version of the Foundation? She bit the inside of her cheek. Nine snorted.
"Oh, bullshit, Malcolm. If there was some threat from this dumbass scandal, there's nowhere safer than here."
"I don't disagree with you," Malcolm replied. "I'm just explaining the way the laws..."
"How do you figure?" Taylor interrupted, staring at Nine.
"What?"
"How do you figure they'd be safer here?" she asked. "You couldn't keep them safe from these Earth Guard people. Couldn't keep us safe from those harvesters and the Foundation in the first place. How would you keep them safe from whatever comes next?"
Nine stopped pacing and glared at her.
"Are you doing your little bad girl routine right now? Because I am not into it. And blaming me for you guys running off and stepping in shit? I mean, wow, that's rich."
"I'm not blaming you for that," Taylor replied. "I'm blaming you for being crap at your job."
Nine locked eyes with Taylor for a tense couple of seconds, no one else in the room saying a word. Then, he turned pointedly away and looked at Lexa, her fingers bouncing seamlessly across the two keyboards. Her eyes were slightly red-rimmed from a recent lack of blinking.
"Tell me you've got something," Nine said.
"When we hacked Gregor's account, I left open a backdoor into Earthguard's network," she replied. "If there's something here about where they took Ran and Copano, I'll find it."
Malcolm cleared his throat, peering uncomfortably over the top of his spectacles.
"I have to ask, to what end?"
"What do you mean?" Nine replied. "So we can bust them out, obviously."
"Bust them out," Malcolm repeated. He put his hand on Nine's shoulder. "You're thinking like it's the old days, Nine. These aren't Mogadorians who have captured the students. Their lives aren't in danger."
"You don't know that," Taylor butted in. "And anyway, even if they are safe with Earthguard, they still shouldn't be under arrest or detained or whatever. The whole scandal is bullshit. We had every right to defend ourselves against those harvesters."
Malcolm turned to her. "Earthguard are our allies. People we've trained and fought alongside work for them. They're good people. If this is what they think is best,
then why are they acting like snakes?" Isabella asked,
her voice calmer than Taylor's, but no less sharp.
"Why do this behind your backs?"
"I don't agree with their methods, and I wish we were kept more in the loop," Malcolm conceded. "But I imagine Gregor knew that if he was up front about Earthguard's decision, he would encounter resistance."
"I would have tried to stop them," Nine grumbled.
"And what kind of damage would that have led to?" Malcolm asked. "No. I think our research down here has made us all a bit paranoid. We can trust Earthguard. I truly believe that."
"The only people I trust are either in this room," Taylor said, "or somewhere they shouldn't be."
Before Malcolm could respond, Lexa made a noise. Her breath caught in her throat, eyes widening. Whatever information she'd hacked into, it wasn't good news. Nine was immediately beside her, reading over her shoulder, his mouth moving as he went.
"You better look at this," she said to Malcolm.
Taylor and Isabella exchanged a look. While the administrators were all huddled on one side of the table, Taylor and Isabella were being kept in the dark as usual.
"Secrets don't make friends," Isabella said with an annoyed toss of her hair.
Malcolm had gone a shade paler from whatever he read.
I think we better adjourn this meeting for now, so we can discuss some, administrative matters."
"Oh, hell with that," Taylor replied.
With her telekinesis, Taylor took hold of Lexa's laptop and levitated it out of reach before the Lorik woman could grab it. Nine stepped back. The computer almost hit him in the chin, but made no effort to stop Taylor.
"Hey," Lexa shouted as she shot up from the table. "That is not okay."
"Let them see it," Nine said grimly. "They deserve to know."
Taylor turned the laptop in the air so she could read the screen, Isabella coming over to stand next to her. Lexa had accessed a report filed to Earthguard's top-secret security database. Incident Report 0010319. Developing. Earthguard's Central contacted by SIS agents in London, responding to a fire in the St. John's Wood neighborhood, where a detachment of peacekeepers was deployed. A home registered to Reginald Barnaby, deceased father of Earthguard asset number 003-NB, was burned to the ground. Preliminary investigation by local authorities indicates arson. Bodies of peacekeeper detachment recovered on scene. All operatives KIA. Autopsies suggest fatalities occurred prior to fire. Involvement of foreign government and/or terrorist organizations suspected. Investigation in process. Whereabouts of 003-NB and mother remain unknown. 003-NB sister and brother-in-law were staying at a nearby hotel and have been detained until investigation concludes. Media blackout protocol in place with assistance from SIS and local authorities. Minimizing dissemination of sensitive information is a priority. Developing. As she finished reading, Taylor forgot to maintain her telekinetic grip on the laptop. It would have fallen to the floor if Nine hadn't snagged it with his own telekinesis and returned it to the table in front of Lexa.
They got Nigel, Taylor said, covering her mouth with her hand. Jesus, what the hell is going on?
He's not dead, Isabella replied, her voice cracking a little.
The report said they couldn't find him, right?
Yes, Malcolm quickly jumped in. Those peacekeepers that went with him, however. They're keeping this stuff from us, Nine said, and he resumed his pacing. Someone burned down Nigel's house 3 days ago and took him, and no one's told us. Gregor's people came in here and grabbed two of my students.
And don't forget Caleb, Isabella said. You think that is a coincidence, That he would be transferred out just now?
Let's not get paranoid, Malcolm said. We need to keep our heads.
You keep your head, old man, Isabella snapped. You're not the one in danger.
Malcolm pursed his lips and turned to Nine, again using that fatherly tone to try calming him down. We will figure this out, Nine, he said. Taylor understood that Malcolm was only trying to protect them and to abide by the rules. She imagined her father would have taken a very similar tact. Still, that didn't make her any less angry. Her friends were being picked off one by one by sinister forces, and the people tasked with protecting them were basically sitting on their hands. She strode forward and put herself in Nine's path.
What are you going to do about this? She asked hotly.
Nine flexed the fingers on his cybernetic arm, looking down at Taylor. His eye twitched as he tried to keep his emotions in check. We'll start making inquiries, Malcolm said. We'll talk with our allies.
You'll sit around, Taylor said, and wait for them to come for the rest of us.
We have an entire student body to think about, Malcolm piped in again. Taylor, please believe us when we say that we'll do everything we can to help Nigel, Ran, and Copano. I'm as angry about this as the rest of you, but we can't do something that would endanger what we've built here.
Malcolm's right, Lexa said. We need to play it smart.
Taylor ignored the others, still looking up at Nine. He was the one with legacies. He'd been chased across the world, fought for his life, battled the Mogadorians. Only he could understand what Taylor was feeling. The need to do something. Anything. Nine's shoulders slumped. He looked away from Taylor. They're right, he said quietly. We have to think about the bigger picture here. There's a right way to attack these problems. Taylor snorted and started to turn away, but Nine grabbed her hand. Believe me, I'd love to rush out of here and start punching things until this was all straightened out, Nine said quietly. But life doesn't work that way anymore. Not for me.
We aren't actually going to listen to those pedal, are we?
No. Of course not.
Taylor and Isabella moved briskly away from the training center on the path back to the dorms. The night was cold enough to make Isabella dramatically chatter her teeth and rub her arms. The campus was deserted, the rest of the student body happily asleep, ignorant to all the forces that would exploit their legacies if given half the chance. Taylor envied them.
Good, Isabella said. Because the way I see it, you owe every one of us a rescue. Time to pay up.
Taylor snorted and shook her head. She was glad to have Isabella at her side,
her own confidence bolstered by the Brazilian's brashness.
"Should I sneak us out of here?" Isabella asked. "Even the added security is no match for my skills. We could be on our way to the nearest secret Earthguard facility in no time."
"That's the thing about secret facilities, though," Taylor replied. "They're secret. What happened to Ran and Capano is totally screwed up, but at least we know they're still in the Earthguard system somewhere. Safe. I'm more worried about Nigel. That fire smells like the Foundation, yes?"
"Yeah."
Isabella shook her head vigorously.
"Professor Nine. Pah. I can't believe him. He hulks around all badass, but when it comes down to it, when Nigel is taken and people murdered, he's like, 'Oh, sorry, we must listen to the dorks and stay here.' All those boring nights planning, and when something finally happens, they puss out. Hey, where are we going?"
Taylor had turned off the path that would lead them back to the dorms, instead leading Isabella towards the cul-de-sac of small cabins where the on-site faculty lived.
"Nine's not totally neutered yet," Taylor replied.
She held up an access card with a faculty emblem on it, the kind that would unlock any door in the academy.
"He slipped me this."
"Aha! Good boy."
"Way I see it, we've only got one lead to the Foundation. I know we've spent the last couple of months trying to set her up, to get her to recruit me. But the situation has changed."
"Dr. Linda,"
Isabella said quietly, a predatory smile spreading across her face.
"You want to confront her."
"I'm going to wake her up and get answers out of her," Taylor answered darkly. "One way or another."
The two of them slipped between cabins, the windows all dark, everyone asleep. They closed in on the one where Dr. Linda lived. She had a few flower pots on her doorstep and a peace sign pinwheel that turned lazily in the night air. Not exactly the lair of a black-hearted spy.
"That's what makes her so dangerous," Taylor reminded herself. "You are thinking of beating answers out of her, yes?"
Isabella whispered, reading her mind.
"Torture, maybe?"
Taylor frowned.
"If that's what I have to do."
"I think,"
Isabella replied, smirking now,
"I think I know a better way."
Chapter 17. Caleb Crane, Sydney, Australia. On the other side of the world, a team of Calebs hefted a steel beam onto their shoulders and marched forward. The duplicates were sweating, their light blue Earth Guard t-shirts stuck to their backs. Caleb wiped his face, sweating too. He wasn't sure if the clones were perspiring because he was, or because they actually had sweat glands of their own. He tried not to ponder weird questions like that anymore. He cringed as the thought called to mind that time in class when he suggested harvesting organs from his duplicates. Still couldn't believe he said that one out loud. The clones were a silent centipede, carrying the girder down the rocky slope of the construction site and stacking it with the others. Caleb was in control. There were no stragglers mouthing off, voicing Caleb's private thoughts. They all moved as one. Ever since the trip home for Christmas, Caleb had felt more relaxed, more centered. Nigel would have been proud of him, Caleb thought. Bloody zen-like, Caleb could imagine him saying. He hoped his friend was all right. He also hoped that feeling would last. Caleb stood on the edge of the pit, supervising his duplicates from there. His muscles ached, but not from lifting anything. It was the dull throb that happened whenever he had a lot of duplicates active for a protracted period of time. They'd been out here all afternoon, Caleb and the others doing the work of a whole construction crew all on their own. He stood on the edge of what used to be the Sydney Opera House. Caleb had seen pictures of the place, the overlapping concrete shells that looked like shark mouths popping out of the ocean.
It had been a cool place, at least until a Mogadorian warship turned it into a crater. And now they were here to rebuild. That was Caleb's first assignment as a member of Earthguard, to travel the world and help areas still recovering from the Moog invasion. Caleb turned to look out over the water, smiling as a cool breeze prickled his skin with mist. Uncle Clarence had warned him to keep an eye out for anything suspicious while on assignment, but there wasn't any of that here. They were doing good work, helping actual people.
Excuse me, piped up a voice at Caleb's elbow. Are you the one in control?
Caleb turned to find a short, middle-aged man at his side, a laminate badge around his neck, identifying him as Press. 5 vans full of them had shown up an hour ago, there for a pre-planned photo op and to write some positive coverage about Earthguard's humanitarian efforts. None of them had paid much attention to Caleb until now. In control of? Caleb asked.
Them,
the reporter said, motioning at the mass of clones currently carrying another steel beam into the pit.
Yeah,
Caleb said. He smiled and extended a hand.
I'm Caleb Crane, sir. Duplicator. What can I do for you?
Yeah, nice to meet you. The reporter quickly shook his hand.
Would you mind getting your duplicates out of the way for a bit? They're visually confusing and a little, creepy.
Oh, Caleb replied. Yeah, sorry. Caleb tried not to take the request personally. He already knew that he wasn't the main attraction here. That honor belonged to Melanie Jackson, the blonde-haired and blue-eyed daughter of President Jackson, who had shepherded the United States through the Mogadorian invasion. Through the eyes of his duplicates, Caleb saw her in the center of the construction site, flowing hair pulled back by a bandana, wearing a cut-off t-shirt that showed off her tan arms. She carried a broken chunk of pipe on her shoulder, part of the works they were clearing out, the 500-pound burden held with an impossible ease as she casually chatted with reporters. To Caleb, Melanie seemed nearly as alien as the Mogadorians. She was a celebrity, the face of Earthguard, always so cool and self-possessed. She even sweated in the perfect amount. With the press around, she was smiling and gregarious, but at the hotel they were staying in, she mostly kept to herself. Caleb was pretty sure she had already forgotten his name. Caleb sent a mental instruction to his duplicates to set down the steel beam they were lugging around and clear out of Melanie's background. Maybe he was distracted, or maybe the reporter's request annoyed him more than he realized. Either way, instead of gently laying down the beam, his clone simply dropped it on the stack. The resulting noise was sharp and loud, like a massive hammer being struck. Pretty much everyone around the construction site flinched. Melanie did more than that. She flung the section of pipe off her shoulder and lunged for cover behind a pile of debris. It was as if she'd come under attack. Everything suddenly felt slow motion to Caleb. The section of pipe fell towards a pair of slow-moving reporters, big enough to crush them. They shielded their faces and shouted. The pipe stopped, suspended in midair. Telekinesis, but not Caleb's. And definitely not Melanie's.
Got it! Daniela Morales cried with a daring smile. Just a little teamwork demonstration for you guys.
Daniela. Caleb had been relieved to see her on his first day, even if the last time they ran into each other she'd been turning his feet to stone. He was even more relieved to see her now. She'd been down in the pit using her stone vision to shore up a salvageable section of foundation, another background sidekick for Melanie. But a more useful one than Caleb. With her telekinesis, she set the pipe down in a nearby scrap heap. Danger averted, Daniela was quick to take a flamboyant bow for the camera, eliciting relieved laughter from the reporters and a smattering of applause. She made it look like the entire incident was intentional. Caleb blew out a relieved sigh. A peacekeeper-assigned press secretary was soon on the scene, telling the reporters that Melanie and the other guard were tired and that it was time to call it a day. Melanie, no longer hiding behind the rubble, waved shakily to her audience as she was escorted away by a half-dozen armed peacekeepers. Daniela dusted off her hands and climbed up the rocky slope to where Caleb awkwardly stood around. None of the lingering reporters paid them any attention. Even though she was the same age as Caleb, he felt like she was older. Daniela acted like she'd seen it all. Well, she once battled a 50-foot-tall Mogadorian monster, specifically engineered to kill Guard, so Caleb supposed, in a way, she had. Daniela was one of the first human guard to make contact with the Lorik. She had fought alongside John Smith in the Battle of New York City. There were stories that she'd even saved his life. Because of her friendship with John and experience in the field, even if that experience was really only a couple of crazy days, Daniela had been allowed to skip the academy and go directly to Earth Guard. As she approached, Daniela worked a finger in and out of her ear and smiled playfully at Caleb.
"Busted my eardrum with that shit, man," she complained. "Your clones got butterfingers."
"Sorry," Caleb replied, rubbing the back of his neck. "I got distracted."
"I'm messing with you. Relax."
They stood next to each other on the edge of the site. On the other side of the pit, Melanie and her entourage had already made it to where the armored cars were parked. They drove away, leaving a handful of peacekeepers and a couple of cars behind for Caleb and Daniela.
"I didn't mean to scare her," Caleb said quietly.
Daniela snorted.
"Not your fault. Girl is jumpy as hell. Last week she about punched a hole through some poor guy's chest because he happened to be standing close by when a car backfired."
"Seriously?"
"Yep. They won't be putting that shit in any of the press releases, though."
The two of them started around the edge of the construction site, taking their time.
"Why is she like that?" Caleb asked, looking around.
"I know I've only been here a couple of days, but this doesn't seem like a very stressful job."
Daniela tucked a stray braid behind her ear, her face turning somber.
"They didn't tell you what happened last year?"
Caleb shook his head.
"She was doing relief work in the Philippines. Some crazies attacked her. Kidnapped the kid she was working with, even. Some Italian. A healer."
"Vincent Yabruzzi."
Caleb knew the name and the incident from the information the Fugitive Six had gathered on the Foundation. Taylor had met the guy when she was in Abu Dhabi. Caleb didn't know that Melanie was present the day that Vincent was taken.
"Are they looking for him?" he asked. "Or, I mean, did they find him?"
Daniela lowered her voice, even though there was no one around.
"They try to keep the nasty stuff from us because Melanie's all sensitive. But one of the peacekeepers told me they found his body in the jungle. Had to identify the poor kid from dental records. I guess the peacekeepers rounded up the crazies that did it. Some cult that thought they could steal his, quote-unquote, magic powers."
"Wow," Caleb said. "When did they find him?"
"A few weeks after he got taken," Daniela replied. "Don't say anything to Melanie. She's still holding out hope, and Earth Guard wants to keep her happy."
"A few weeks."
Caleb shook his head. The timeline didn't make sense. Taylor met Vincent in the United Arab Emirates well after that. The body must have been a fake planted by the Foundation, and the cult used as scapegoats, just like the Harvesters had been.
"All we've done is help, yet some people already hate our kind," Daniela continued, misreading Caleb's solemn face. "You know all about that, huh?"
Daniela gave him a meaningful look, probably thinking about Caleb's run-in with the Harvesters.
She had been there for that battle. But how much did she know about who was really behind it? Who had set that conflict in motion? Did Daniela know about the Foundation? Even though Caleb felt like he could trust Daniela, he kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, Caleb replied. It's messed up.
Uh-huh. Anyway, in case you haven't realized it yet, we aren't just here to help build stuff and stand in the background of pictures.
We aren't?
Jet lag making you slow?
She elbowed him playfully.
We're here to keep an eye on Ms. Earthguard, in case something else goes down. Strong as she is, she never hit the academy. She never ran for her life during a Moog ambush. She's not hard like us, and the higher-ups know it. But she's marketable as shit and makes people feel safe. They know that, too.
So we're like bodyguards?
Caleb stared at Daniela.
They told you all this?
I'm not stupid. I piece things together. I mean, obviously they also want us here because we've got useful legacies for the Repair Civilization World Tour. But we're also here to keep Melanie safe. Maybe stop her from flying off the handle when possible.
Dang, Caleb said. I feel even worse now about dropping that beam.
Daniela patted Caleb on the shoulder as they reached the cars.
It's not a bad gig, being her sidekick. We get to help a lot of people, travel the world. You ever think you'd get to go to Australia?
No way, Caleb said, smiling now, relieved that they were moving on to less heavy subjects.
Yeah, me neither. I'd never even been to Staten Island before all this.
She let her eyes flash silver, the telltale sign of her activating her legacy.
Went down.
Well, I've still never been to New York, Caleb replied.
Don't worry. You will. That's the other good thing about this detail, Daniela continued. Princess Melanie needs a lot of vacations. Pretty much any time she wants. And we get to go along, since we're basically the only friends she's allowed to have.
Caleb's brows wrinkled at that. Melanie hadn't seemed very friendly to him so far. She acted like he and Daniela weren't even there. He'd thought socializing at the academy had been difficult to wrap his head around, but this was a whole other level of complicated. A peacekeeper saluted them and opened the back door of an SUV. Caleb saluted back, then climbed in after Daniela. She was still talking.
After Sydney, I heard we're heading back to the States. Some rich friend of Melanie's family offered to host us at his beach house. It's in Florida, which... Daniela made a face. Definite downgrade over Australia. Still, should be a chill time.
Caleb sat back and let the air conditioning wash over him. His skin was hot from being in the sun all day, his atoms quaking from spending so much time using his duplicates.
What rich guy? Caleb thought to ask, opening one eye to look at Daniela.
Think Melanie said his name is... Seidel. Wade Seidel.
Chapter 18. Taylor Cook. The Human Guard Academy. Point Reyes, California. Dr. Linda slept curled up on her side. The floorboards creaked under Taylor's feet as she approached the woman's bed. The psychiatrist stirred. Taylor made no effort to hide her footfalls. As Dr. Linda blinked awake, Taylor clapped a hand over the woman's mouth, gentle but firm.
"Please don't scream," Taylor said. "I need your help."
Taylor made her eyes wide, the whites shining in the near darkness of Linda's bedroom. She forced her hand to tremble, knowing that Linda would be able to feel the tremor. She wanted to seem desperate and cornered. After weeks of perfecting her badass act, Taylor wasn't totally sure she could pull this off. Linda's hands were still pinned under the sheet. Taylor had checked the room quickly before waking her up. She didn't find any weapons. Just novels, scented candles,